What if you could be more well-liked, get a promotion, impress potential dates or even your in-laws without even saying a word? When it comes to life hacks, I really don't like that term. Most are either overstated BS or just flat out don't work. But there is one hack that can actually change your life if you implement it properly. And simply it's this: be interesting. Being interesting makes everything in your life easier. It makes people want to interact with you more. It makes people trust you. It is the oil that greases the wheel of change and progress. But can you just become interesting? Isn't that something that you're born with? What if you're an introvert? Well, it turns out being interesting is a skill, one that you can learn and hone and use to your advantage. Have you ever thought about why you choose the politicians you vote for? Or why companies love to give out branded chapsticks and beer koozies? Once you understand, not only will you be more interesting, but you'll be able to use being interesting as a tool to create the life you want. Welcome to Change Made Easy. Change is hard. We make it easy. My name is Paul Levitin, and I'm a certified behavior change specialist and coach, and I've been working in the field of behavior change for over a decade. My goal is to help you understand the science and master the art of change. Because when change is easy, improving your health, wealth, relationships, and living a happy and fulfilling life becomes automatic. Today, I'm going to tell you why being more interesting is the ultimate hack to making change easier, and how you can instantly become more interesting without picking up any new hobbies, changing your personality, or even having to speak more at all. Even though I hate the term life hack, I'm going to hit you with a big one today. Because the ultimate life hack that's going to make creating positive change in your life easier and make your life easier as a whole is being more interesting. Being interesting is a life hack because life gets easier when people like you. It's just a flat out fact. You probably know about quote unquote pretty privilege. Maybe you've never heard the term before, but you probably get what it means from context clues. When you see a classically good looking person, doesn't matter man or woman or in between, you can assume that life for them is probably easier in some way. Maybe when your firm hires a pretty new blonde, or when the guy with the big arms and the square jawline gets bumped to first class on a crowded flight. It doesn't matter if it's fair or not. It's the reality of the world. And it might feel like, well, that's a new thing. It's because of social media. That's the vanity-fueled world that we live in today. But the reality is it's nothing new. It's actually built into your very DNA. People prefer better-looking people. It's just science. And even if consciously you say, well, I don't judge looks, subconsciously, your ancestral DNA is analyzing facial symmetry and muscle mass and bone structure and body weight and shape and size. It's not right. It's definitely not politically correct, but it is life. And there's a reason for it. Because for every other animal and for humans for hundreds and millions of years, that's how best mates were determined. Early humans existed for hundreds of thousands of years before language was invented. And in those times, decisions around who to mate with, who to hunt with, who to trust, were all made based on physical features because it gave an idea of who was fit and strong and best to partner with, again, both romantically and otherwise. And now we've left those days long in the past, but the remnants of that programming is still in our subconscious and in our DNA. And you might hear something like that and you go, well, not me. I don't judge people by looks. I know it's on the inside that counts. And we like to think that about ourselves because we want to believe that we're rational and that we make decisions based on facts and logic. But the reality is it's just not how it works. Behavioral economics discusses a concept called cognitive biases. And cognitive biases are theoretical errors in human judgment and decision-making that, if we were purely rational creatures, wouldn't make sense. And what this does is it points that we are not purely rational, and our decisions are highly influenced by many unknown factors that shift and direct our decision-making away from what would be considered optimal if it was purely based on logic. So logically, you know that a person's outward appearance doesn't affect their intelligence, their personality, or if you should like them or not. But in reality, that's not how we see it play out. For instance, let's say you're deciding who to vote for between two different candidates for Congress in your area, and you watch them debate. How do you decide which one to vote for? Now, you might think that you would listen to the facts, and when all is said and done, you're going to decide who presented their points more clearly, who seemed like they'd be better equipped to lead your town, your city, whatever. Who's the logical choice? And that would be all fine and dandy if we made decisions logically. That's what you would do, but that's not how humans work. Instead, and studies and science have shown this, you're more likely to want to support the candidate who you find more physically attractive. So if one candidate is a 6 foot tall white man with a square jawline and a full head of hair and a freshly pressed suit and sparkling blue eyes, and his opponent is a frumpy old man in a sweatpants and a stain on his shirt, the chances are you're going to support dreamy blue eyes, regardless of what they had to say. And you might think that you're supporting him because of his policies, because he won the debate. But again, the studies show, using brain imaging software, that that's not actually what's happening. And that can be great for all the Barbies and Kens out there, but how does this help you create positive change in your life if you weren't born with genetics of the gods? Well, lucky for you, you can tap into this phenomenon by understanding the underlying principles that lead it to happen. Because the reality is, when you see a candidate for public office and you subconsciously make a decision to vote for them based on their looks, there's a reason for that. And it's a combination of those cognitive biases that I was just speaking about a moment ago. So the first thing is known as the halo effect. And it's a bias that causes you to assume that people with one good trait tend to have more good traits. This is why good-looking people are thought of as smarter, more honest, more trustworthy, and a million other things. Because again, logically, you know that that's not true, that looks have no bearing on anything else, it's just looks. But that ancient subconscious wiring is hard to beat. So when you see someone, you see that they are good looking, and instantly your brain says, okay, I can trust this person is smart, this person, I should listen when they talk more. Similarly, people who are very talented in one area are often seen as being better in other areas. Hey, real quick, we'll be back to the show in just a few seconds, but right now I just have to tell you about my free weekly newsletter. If you want to join the thousands of change seekers just like you who get a curated list each week of 5 educational, informative, and inspiring pieces of content to help you on your quest for change, then click the link in the notes that says free newsletter right now. You'll get signed up for free tips that will make your change journey easier, sent straight to your inbox every Friday. All you have to do is click free newsletter in whatever app you're listening on. Okay, now back to the show. So a famous musician gets interviewed on their opinion on global financial markets, or a politician is asked about their prediction for the Super Bowl. These things have no correlation. There's no reason why that should happen. But we do, because subconsciously we make quick decisions about people. So cognitive biases like the halo effect help us theoretically save time when we're sizing someone up. And then going back to the voting example, another bias that we see at work here when you're choosing someone based on looks as opposed to the actual content of what they're running on is called the availability bias. And the availability bias means that we err towards solutions or answers that are more readily available in our minds. So a classic example of this is after a plane crash, people tend to buy less plane tickets and opt for car travel in coming days, weeks, and months. So when there is a plane crash that's televised on the news, everyone hears about it. For months following, airline travel goes down and car travel goes up. Because in the moment of planning travel, in the days or weeks after a plane crash, that recent story of the crash is readily available in your mind. And they say, okay, let's just take a 24-hour road trip instead of a 3-hour flight. But logically, this doesn't make sense because millions of people die every year from car crashes, and a plane crash is literally a statistical anomaly. They almost never happen. But it is exactly the fact that it is an anomaly that makes it stand out and be so readily available in your brain. The news doesn't report on car crashes because if they did, they would be reporting on nothing but car crashes forever. But they report on airplane crashes, and it sways our illogical minds. So similarly, when you're looking at two candidates and thinking which of these people would make a better leader, logic would say you should weigh the candidates by their individual merit. But your subconscious, looking to save time and energy, scans your brain and looks for what do other leaders and politicians that I've known in the past look like? And then your availability bias kicks in. Suddenly, the cookie cutter old white man, who looks like every other old politician that you've ever seen, becomes a natural choice. Even though the way he looks has no bearing on whether or not the guy standing in front of you would be a good leader or not. So that decision was not made through logic, but you justify it and think that it is. So what does this have to do with change? Well, you might not be able to change how you look, but you can change how people perceive you. And this is where being interesting comes in. Because as I just explained, thanks to the halo effect, if you are perceived as interesting in one area, it creates a sort of halo, and people will subconsciously assume that you're also better in other areas. This is why so many business deals are done outside of the boardroom, at dinners and cocktail parties and on a golf course. Think about it. Picture an executive wowing the CEO of a company he's trying to partner with on the golf course. He's hitting 5 under. He's making witty jokes the whole time. He's keeping the whole group smiling and laughing for 18 holes. When it comes down time to say yes or no to this deal, the CEO might think, well, this guy is smart. I like his style. He's got good things to say. Let's do it. And obviously, this is not the proper way to make a decision. And it's possible that the guy is smart and would be a great business partner, but it's not related at all to the way he presents himself on the golf course. The decision is being made because of the halo effect. It makes that executive who is joking and is showing his skills at golf seem more appealing and more skilled in other areas like business. And it's also the availability effect. When the CEO starts to think, what type of person do I want to do business with? What's available in his subconscious is, what's the type of person that I want to play golf with? It's a subtle difference, but he signs the deal and his company loses $1 billion. So when you go to a party or a cocktail hour or a first date or a networking event or to meet your partner's parents for the first time, being able to get them interested in you will activate the halo effect, bolstering you up, not just in the area you're actually good at, but in all areas. And might sound obvious, but the reality is people like interesting people. In my own life, being a generally interesting person has paid lots of dividends. I haven't interviewed for a job in over a decade. I've gotten tons of opportunities, including high-paying corporate jobs that have come simply through the virtue of me being interesting enough for people to want to talk to me. So obviously, you might hear this and say, well, that's nice for you, but you can't just become interesting. I'm an introvert. I'm shy. I'm just boring. And to that, I'd say that's a limiting belief, and that's exactly what's holding you back. Because remember the halo effect. Being good in one area makes you seem better in others. And so the reality is, it's just about confidence. If you're confident in yourself, confident that you are interesting, that what you want to talk about is valuable, then that is literally the very thing that makes you interesting. People take interest in you when you speak clearly and confidently, when you wear your halo proudly. And then you add to that availability. So when you see an old white man on stage talking politics, your brain goes, this is what politicians look like. This guy must know what he's talking about. So similarly, if you present yourself confidently and speak with passion about whatever you're interested in, then the person's availability effect will kick in and go, well, the last time I heard someone speak so passionately about something, it was very interesting. This person must be interesting too. So you literally become interesting by embodying it. So, but before I get you thinking that this is all about showing off or showboating, being interesting is not all about you. Because the real hack to be interesting is by being interested. The best sales teachers will tell you that the best way to close a sale is to do more listening than talking. People love to talk about themselves. And if you simply act as a sounding board for them to express their feelings, they will walk away feeling better about themselves and about you. And you walk away having closed a deal. If it's a date, a job interview, a sales pitch, you do well to learn to listen and be genuinely interested in what the other person is saying. And if you do that well enough, the person you're talking to will think, you know, I just like this person. And they will interestingly take an interest in you. There's an old quote that's attributed to President Theodore Roosevelt that goes, people don't care how much you know until they know how much you care. And that's exactly, again, what sales teachers, coaches, therapists, anyone in the field of influencing others has been taught for years. And the thing is that we're all in the field of influencing others. I'm doing my best to influence you right now with this podcast. It's my hope that you feel that I have a genuine interest in helping you create positive life change. And that's why you continue to tune in, maybe share this with a friend right now. You have to influence your kids to listen to you, or you have to influence your boss to choose your proposal over someone else's. You have to influence your partner on where to get dinner tonight. So it's easy to think that the way to influence people is to tell them what to do, explain why you're right. But in practice, we see that that rarely gets the results that we're after. So the real route to success is asking more questions. Just be sure it's not from a place of being a sleazy, disingenuous slime ball. This isn't a trick. Instead, ask someone questions about them, about their life, their struggles, their successes. And what that does is it lets them feel a genuine interest from you, like you're invested in their story. And that's when people really start to open up. And when someone opens up and shares with you, that means they are now invested in you. And this unlocks another set of cognitive biases called reciprocity and continuity. So reciprocity says we're more likely to want to give to others that have given to us. This is why companies give away free gifts like koozies and chapstick, even when it has nothing to do with what the business actually does or the product that they sell. Simply getting something from them makes you subconsciously more inclined to want to give something to them, which they hope is your money. And the continuity effect says that we act in ways that is congruent with our past actions. So when you do something nice for someone, it actually creates a sort of self-halo effect around them. Why would you do something nice for someone that you don't like? That means that your subconscious goes, okay, this person must be good. I must like this person. And to uphold continuity, I'm going to continue to act in that way. So there's a famous story about Benjamin Franklin that when he needed something from a politician or a judge, he wouldn't try to do them a favor. That would be too obvious. Instead, he would ask them for a favor. He'd ask them for something small, like borrowing a book. By doing this, he was activating the continuity circuit in their brain. Because why would they lend him a book if he weren't a good, trustworthy person who he liked? So then, when he came back later with a bigger ask down the road, in order to be consistent with their past actions, they were more likely to agree. So when you genuinely listen to someone, first it triggers reciprocity because you've done something nice for them by listening to them and letting them share their stories, which makes them feel good. And secondly, it triggers continuity because why would they be sharing their stories with you and telling you all of this stuff if you weren't a good, trustworthy person? And that's how winning relationships are built. Personally, professionally, romantically, doesn't matter. You ask questions. You listen to them. You reflect back their sentiments. You be a person they want to talk to more. That means you literally don't even have to say anything about yourself. So if you're an introvert, hurrah. You have to be interested in them. And then you can just simply use your interest to relate back to them and be a little bit more interesting. So by being interested in them, it taps into reciprocity and consistency, making you seem more interesting yourself. And when you seem more interesting in one area, it unlocks the halo effect and the availability bias, which makes you seem more interesting in other areas, even if those areas aren't directly related to anything you've been talking about. So my action step for you this week is to listen more. Get into a conversation, be it with a stranger or someone you're close with or literally anyone, with your only intention being to learn as much as possible about that person. And just see how you being interested in them can lead for them to be more interested in you. Isn't that interesting? Now you know how to use psychology to appear more interesting to others and how you can be the most interesting person in the room without saying a word. That's change made easy. If you're really passionate about making this change stick, then I just have to remind you about my free weekly newsletter. Don't miss out on joining the thousands of change seekers just like you who get a curated list each week of 5 educational, informative, and inspiring pieces of content that will help you on your quest for change. Go to the notes of whatever app you're listening on and click the link that says free newsletter now. And you'll be signed up to get free tips sent straight to your inbox every Friday that will help make your change journey easier. All you have to do is click free newsletter right now. Go to that link, and I'll see you back here every Tuesday and Thursday for new episodes of Change Made Easy.